Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. We have a panel this morning that we're going to discuss many issues on, and we have a terrific group joining us for the discussion this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
Peace to you, my brother. Peace to you.
Also coming up.
And also with you.
Yes. also joining us, WAMC's wonderful newsman, Ray Graff. Good morning, Raymond.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Good morning is how you respond.
And that's the last thing you're going to hear from him today.
That's not a very nice thing to say.
That's right.
And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here as well. And apparently I missed quite a panel yesterday.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I was out cold on NyQuil, but from what I hear,
so was I. Oddly enough,
from what I hear, it was quite the.
It was a frank sexual discussion.
It was special.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that I know you guys discussed, and I think it's interesting to go back to, is the media coverage of this event, and initially getting high marks, but being home yesterday, I was watching a lot of the coverage, and it was wow. And I will say, all over the place.
Yeah, I definitely want to regrade. I bet you do too, Alan. I think that the first day, I thought they did a fairly good job. Yesterday was atrocious reporting, rumors, little more than tweets.
Exactly.
CNN named a dark-skinned man. My God, that's like the you know, the Peterson case where you just name a minority as a suspect. It was a very bad performance.
Well, John King did that actually on the first night, and we kept on calling him Bolo. It was a be on the lookout, I guess, is it bothered me then, but yesterday, because of what was coming out of the tape and so forth, they were putting the two of those together, and I don't know necessarily if that was, you know, their assumption more than it was obvious reporting that they had from the FBI.
Assumptions don't belong in journalism. That's
right.
Well, Rosemary is exactly right, but I think one of the things we have here is, you know, the reputation of social media for getting it first, and then worrying about whether or not, we could compete with the social media, and this is causing a tremendous tension.
It is
to be first. The AP got it wrong a lot, the AP is a conservative news organization. I've been talking to my friends on the Media Project, Rex and Ira, and they're very disappointed. Apparently, several people have been reading bad stuff from the news desks into their anchors' ears and being publicly criticized when it turns out not to be true. They didn't make any arrests, which the New York Post was talking about. Twelve people. Maybe I was wrong about the Post, but 12 people, the Post said, had been killed in the Boston Marathon. Of course,
it's not true.
They hadn't. Mm-hmm. So,
well, here is one of my issues in watching the coverage, both on Monday, Tuesday, and yesterday, was and you touched on this, is why I want to go back to it, of using Twitter as a source.
That's right. And it's what Alan says. You want to be first. So.
But it's almost gauging public opinion. It's Bob in Milwaukee says this, and they use that. Well, we don't know who Bob is. We don't know what Bob is. We don't know. I mean, it's not like it's an on the scene. You know, I understand of saying, well, this is from a Boston runner who was on the scene and saying they say in their Twitter feed. But that's much different than just saying this random person made this outrageous claim, and we are now going to report that on the news.
It's a double-edged sword. Now, when CNN and others were jumping to the fact that there has been an arrest, I was doing Vox Pop, the science forum, yesterday, and Patrick walked in at the 20 break and said, look, there has been no arrest. We got a tweet from the Boston police saying just that. Now, I think you have to consider your source. So, in other words, Boston Police official Twitter outlet, that's a good source. So
I came on. How do you know it really was the Boston Police tweeting, though? That's another problem. But I want a name.
You can vet that. What do you mean? You want the problem, the public information officer?
You can set up a Twitter account and make it appear to be from something.
Right, but you can certainly check back and see their previous tweets, which Patrick did.
But my problem is when the Boston Globe or CNN or these other organizations, and it's probably unfair for me to say the Boston Globe specifically, but I know CNN has certainly done this, where they will take that, they will report it. That someone tweeted this, and then another news organization will report that CNN is reporting that this person tweeted, and that is where you get kind of this horrible.
There was, even aside from the bad reporting, there was another interesting and disturbing trend yesterday where Reddit, which is a very popular site, put out a bunch of pictures, and people were trying to figure out who the suspect should be. They were doing, in other words, police report. That's called crowdsourcing, right, Alan, where you send out some information and you ask for experts in your audience to give. I found that very dangerous, too.
When you think of what we know now and what we don't know, one of the fascinating things to me yesterday was we were going to have a press conference at 10 o'clock. We were going to have one at noon. Then they moved it to 4, and then they moved it to 5, and now we may have it sometime today.
Yep.
And you wonder how much of this is caused by what they indeed know and what is being reported.
Absolutely.
And what is being misreported, and I think that's fascinating.
Absolutely. I mean, the New York Post is showing pictures of a bag on the front, in front of the thing. And this is the bag they are suggesting that blew up. Then we're seeing pictures of two guys, and those two guys are supposedly have a black nylon bag, over their shoulder. But Ray, in terms of what you just said, I'm so fascinated by the fact that the social media thing has moved so fast that the Boston police have a Twitter.
Everybody does, though.
Well, no, I know, but they feel they have to do it in order to stay current.
Well, we were talking about this yesterday, and my opinion was, and I'm surprised that you two, Rosemary and Alan, didn't really sort of go that way, was that things are now moving too fast because of this. And I think yesterday afternoon was exactly the example. In other words, they're racing. Social media has all this stuff out there. And so now these networks are racing to get stuff on that ordinarily they would vet the living daylights out of.
Sure.
You're right.
To beat somebody else. Exactly. And it's a bad cycle. Yeah. It has to be reined in.
I agree with you, but you look at, and you and I were talking about this 2 days ago, where remembering 9/11, I mean, there was certainly a lot of bad reporting there as well in those early days because we were searching, and that was before social media.
But it was not as much.
It wasn't as much.
And it was slower. I mean, that's not saying it was better, but you're right.
There is one thing that has to be said, though, and that is that the media can be a big help in this investigation. I think the authorities are aware of that. They put out an actual picture, if they have it, and somebody in the public will locate them. That's what happened with the Washington sniper case.
Absolutely.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
When a
sure.
car went out and a trucker called almost, I think it was within a few hours, and said, hey, I see this car right here. So I wonder if the media is being played by the authorities, too. I wonder if some of this is misinformation coming out from the FBI and police authorities.
Why would they do that again?
I think if they're asking about black bags, if they're asking, they want people to call in with tips. I'm not convinced that all of this is not without some official sources.
So why is that misinformation? I'm sorry, I'm a little slow.
In other words, if they're looking for somebody else, perhaps they have one of the two.
Yeah.
And they're not saying they do. And they're putting certain information out there designed to smoke out the other one. Conspiratorially, I think you might be onto something.
I think it's one of the reasons that you should, and we used to be very careful about reporting things, even if it came from a police or FBI source. Please remember Richard Jewell, the Olympic bombing.
Well, the FBI
surrounded his mother's house, carried out boxes of material. Was the media wrong to report this? How could you not report that? And yet that was misinformation.
Yeah. I want to raise one other thing, Joe, if I may, in this. We had one of the worst accidents that has ever happened in the United States in a small Texas town yesterday.
Almost leveled.
Is it known as an accident now?
Well, I think the presumption is, in this case, otherwise we would have heard it differently, that it was an accident, that it was a fire that did it. But maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't know. I think there's still, the jury is still out.
Here's
what I understand.
I read in one, and perhaps CNN, I'm not sure which website this morning, quoting somebody close, saying it was a small fire. Somebody sprayed water onto the ammonium nitrate, which just caused it to blow up like the Oklahoma City bomb and just level blocks of the area.
But, the official word is that criminal activity is not apparent, but has not been ruled out.
Well, what are they going to say? You know, you rule everything out. Nothing's ever ruled out. But I think that the tone of the reports are that it was not, a criminal, issue. Here's the point. One of the biggest accidents in history happens in a small Texas town, and now you get this pushback between the Boston thing, where there was criminal activity, right, and we know it, and this terrible thing, proximity. Which one really is? Because I saw what happened. First, we got this huge reaction of the Texas explosion. But then, almost immediately, you begin to see the pushback of the Boston Marathon.
Because it's an accident, allegedly.
Yeah, well, I think that's a big part of it.
Until they say otherwise,
Well, Alan, do you think it has to do with the proximity, West Texas versus the East Coast major city?
I do.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised nobody made the Waco connection, frankly.
Yes.
Because if it wasn't an accident and it was in Waco, then... And if it turns out it was white supremacists who did the Boston, then you have, and the ricin, and then you can have a conspiracy out the yin-yang.
But last night when the early reporting, they were making that connection to Waco very early.
Well, that's right. They were saying Waco a lot.
Yeah.
And Waco, of course, is a code word for many people, as is the fuel that blew up, because that's what's used.
Well, it was fertilizer factory.
Yeah, that's what's used in bombs.
That's where it is, you know. Exactly. So if a fertilizer factory is going to blow up, then it would be there.
Right, you are, always.
And on that very salient point,
in Boston,
we are going to take a quick break. We'll continue our conversation. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable's panel this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff is here, and University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us as well. We would love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And while we are busy talking about the impact of social media, don't forget that you can use it to comment on us well. Facebook page, or certainly tweet us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. And I have to say, and I don't know whether this is just me, but I was looking at my Facebook feed and seeing all this stuff go out, and I was looking at Twitter and seeing all these different things go out, and I sort of immediately dismissed them. And I don't know.
That's because you're old.
In the so minority here, but they just sort of smack of sensationalist and conspiracy theories.
Well, there are a lot of these listservs. We have one in Great Barrington, Pittsfield. I'm not even going to name it, but it is just filled with garbage. I mean, stuff that people make up. It is so irresponsible. It is so awful, and we allow it.
I think it's easier for us to see it with our many years and all our acquired wisdom. I do not see that all my students have quite the
filter.
The filter that we do. Mm. Yeah, they tend to believe it. They're more gullible.
Joe, did you know we had acquired wisdom? That's amazing.
No.
I didn't realize. No, I think she wasn't speaking for us.
No, I don't think so. I think it's just between her
certainly
and
Alan.
You're so modest.
Yeah. This is the latest. This is from the Boston Globe. Authorities have clear video images of two separate suspects in the Boston Marathon bombings carrying black bags at each explosion site and are planning to release those images today in an appeal for the public's help in identifying the men. According to an official briefed on the case, the official said the two suspects were seen separately on videotape, one at each of the two bombing sites, which are located about a block apart. I think this is interesting for two reasons, and I want to go back because it's something that Rosemary brought up. From the very beginning, we have the FBI, the Boston police, and even the President of the United States has called for help from the public in this regard, and has asked for any videotape, any pictures that you took, anything on your camera. Everybody has a camera in their pocket now. Anything that was taken within that zone, and I guess they received hundreds of thousands of images that they're going through, and again, it seems like they're going to now give a little bit more information, and once again, ask for the public to to respond.
And the press becomes the transmission vehicle for all of this. I mean, there has to be cooperation. There is cooperation, and I said days ago they were going to get these guys and they'd get them fast, and I still believe that.
Okay.
Well, I mean, relatively.
That's dismissive, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, relatively fast is still, you know, if we do this under a week, I mean, that's to me, that's relatively fast.
It is.
I mean, that's pretty incredible when you think about it. We're going to take a quick break and get the latest news. I just want to remind you that at 11 o'clock this morning, the president is traveling to Boston, and there will be a memorial service in Boston for the victims of the Boston Marathon attacks, and we'll be covering that live here on WAMC at 11 o'clock. So that is coming up in about an hour and a half, and our friends at WBUR will be handling that, and we'll be covering it live. We welcome you to email us, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll continue our conversation on this and many other pressing issues coming up next on the Roundtable. Welcome back to our panel on the Roundtable this morning. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff is here, and Rosemary Armeo joins us. And also just joining us in the studio is our producer, Sarah LaDuke, who has one item from the mailbag, and we welcome your item. All you have to do is email us at roundtable@wamc.org.
That's right. We have Mary Jo checking in by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. She writes, "The danger with the current visible news gathering was displayed by yesterday's coverage of the Boston situation. I recall this quote from an interview CBS TV journalist Steve Croft concluded with Andy Rosenthal, then Washington editor of the New York Times, on why certain news was printed in the paper a few days after the peg. Responded Rosenthal, "We're not afraid to be late."
Well, isn't that a, you know, don't you hope that that would be the mantra for most?
Yeah.
That we're not afraid to be all that late?
Devil's advocate. If you get it right. It's not news then, right?
Was a different era. He didn't have to worry about satellite TV and social media. Mm. There's just an increased pressure to
But who looks better? In the end, who looks better? Yeah. The person who gets it right or the person who got it wrong and first?
Okay, here's what really happens. We all look bad because people don't remember who got it. They don't remember bylines. They just remember, oh, the media screwed it up.
And I like what Ray just said. Then it's not, if you're late, it's not news.
Yeah.
That's very interesting, Ray,
because
the
word
then
it becomes history, right?
News has the word new in it.
It could be sort of like, you know, semi-old.
Sarah LaDuke, thank you very much. And again, you can write to us, roundtable@wamc.org. We have a lot to talk about, and I want to get to some other subjects. And as I mentioned, again, we'll be covering the memorial service from Boston at 11 a.m. this morning, and we'll be talking much more about it throughout the day, of course. I think what was fascinating, for want of a better term, of watching the Senate debate and the Senate vote on gun control yesterday, and then the press conference that the president held, the event that the president held in the Rose Garden, was that I don't remember in recent memory seeing a president so openly disgusted in all my life.
Especially this president, who has been a moderated force, who has not gone to extremes, who has not made a lot of noise about things. When he did that, you had to sit up and you had to take notice and you had to believe in, at least I did, had to believe in him, in what he was saying. It was an extraordinary thing. He may have lost the vote. He has not lost the issue. I think that the American people are going to be inflamed about this. We've seen 90% polls showing up to 90% of the people saying that they believe in these background checks. You have the NRA running what they're running and winning. And I think there are an awful lot of people. A lot of these Southern Republicans voted that way because they thought they would face a primary otherwise and that they would lose. But they may have been between a rock and a hard place. They may lose as a result of this because I think we've got an inflamed nation right now on this issue.
There was a very powerful image that I believe it was an AP image of the president in the Rose Garden with a scowl and the vice president with his face in his hands.
Well, I sort of remember Clinton being a little annoyed with Congress during the impeachment stuff, so that might be a little bit overstated.
Isn't that personal?
Well, this is true. I mean, what I object to.
Yeah, but that's based on an issue and based on somebody's credibility, right. I think. But go ahead.
What I object to is the press is portraying this as a big loss for Obama. And I think it might be a big loss for the country, which is hoping not so much for gun control, which they are in favor of, but for Congress working together. Bipartisan support. This was a bipartisan bill. It was backed by the public. It had support from almost the 60 votes they needed.
56?
56, yeah.
Well, if you take a look at this morning's Daily News, you will see a paper that is almost totally devoted, front page editorials and the rest of it, to this loss. And I don't think Obama comes out badly one whit as a result of this. I think he comes out as a leader who really is trying to do the best thing and is very frustrated by it.
I think Congress, there's always been a dispute, hasn't there, about the best way to represent. You either represent what your constituency wants,
right,
or you stand up and you lead them, and you give the best vote for your people.
That's
and
right.
That's why I object to that, Ms. Part, even though I don't agree with the vote, of course. I have not heard an explanation of why a vote no against gun control was good for me.
Well, but yes, but they're saying it's good for them. We all know
right.
it, which is it's good for us because we'll lose a primary if we don't do it this way.
Alan, I'm interested in your perspective on this because what do you think happened? There were Republican lawmakers who had A ratings from the National Rifle Association who backed this particular legislation, and then all of a sudden everything started to crumble.
Well, remember, you needed 60 votes.
Right.
And Reid did that on purpose because he wanted it to be 60 votes on all of the people who were going to offer amendments on the floor. The other thing that Reid did is he voted no. And the reason, and he did it for a reason, because under the parliamentary rules, you are not allowed to ask for a revote unless you voted with the majority on it.
Oh, that's
interesting. And that was the reason that he did what he did. So I don't think this is over yet. I think that's a pretty big clue.
That's interesting.
Opponents of gun control from both parties said they made their decisions based on logic and that passions had no place in the making of momentous policy.
Well, I hope they learn that they were wrong.
Well, I mean, look, you know, I think passion and emotion certainly does. Look at what happened in New York in literally overnight. A massive gun control law, and that was done to take advantage of the emotion and the passion and
to
get it done while he could. So, obviously ridiculous, but it plays on both sides of the aisle.
I'm sorry. I was with you up.
No, the statement that Joe just made was obviously ridiculous.
Well, how is it based on logic, right?
Yeah,
right.
It's based on self-serving nonsense.
But it plays on both sides
of the aisle. It's
logical
to them.
You use emotion to move your agenda regardless of which side you're on. I mean, that's the whoever
that's
said
politics.
That, whoever said that doesn't know politics.
This is not over. Every time we have one of these tragedies, every time we have a senseless shooting, it is not over. This is going to come right back to those guys who voted no.
There was a I saw this on television last night at the end of the vote. I don't know if any of you saw this, but at the end of the vote, there was a woman who was in the gallery who screamed out, "Shame on you, shame
yes.
on you."
Mm-hmm.
They detained the woman. She was the woman who wrestled the gun out of the shooter's hand in Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Gabrielle Giffords shooting, and
And you know, you think of obviously her thoughts, and I mean, to me, that just put a perspective into
we
it.
Yeah, we have rules for behavior in public buildings, but not with handling guns in public.
But I certainly agree. Right. I certainly agree with one thing she said. Shame on them.
Shame on them. And it's I think it's absolutely, and that crossed my mind as well, that you have. That you have rules. She's being detained and will probably
and people will be murdered all over the United States.
More than
like I say, it's not disagreeing with their vote. It's just that it's so patently self-serving and helpful to the NRA rather than to the American public.
So let me posit this and then discuss it. And that is, there are a lot of this. You know, you try to make after a debate, you try to make the best of a bad situation. So those who are in favor of various gun control measures were saying, if anything, that this may help them to get more public support and to have. Pressure from their constituents to change the argument and allow things to move forward and maybe even become a little bit stronger. I don't know. It seems if not now, when would be my personal opinion, but I don't know how you feel about that argument.
I think it's the only thing that can be said. I do think that this was a wrong-headed vote on the United States Senate. You know, Joe and group, I think what happens in a lot of these instances is the vote goes the wrong way on immigration, or the vote goes the wrong way, in my view.
Wrong way, according to you.
According to Alan. Yeah. The wrong way, according to Alan, and according to basic sensibility.
Speaking for basic sensibility, here's Alan. And take it away.
Our spokesman on basic sensibility.
I see.
Well, on immigration or on women or on these things, and these guys, the same guys, by the way, vote that way, and then all of a sudden you have a presidential election, and they get their heads handed to them, and they take a look at the demographics, and they take a look at what happened. Oh my God, we didn't get any Hispanic votes, or we got very few of them. Or oh my God, women went the other way. Surprise, surprise. And then all the Republicans go around in a circle, and they begin to yell at each other that somehow we have to reform the party because they followed the common wisdom up front and voted that way. And then they got their heads handed.
But
to them.
Is that not the same thing that in Clinton's day he did in moving center and right on many issues because they had their heads handed to them for 12 years prior to that?
You mean the Democrats did?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
I think this is called democracy. This is exactly the way the system is supposed to work. You appoint a representative. If he doesn't do what you like, you vote him out.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think a lot of these Republicans have this problem here in New York State, too.
Yes.
You know, on things like gay rights, which is a very important bill. And that's when you see what we call profiles in courage. Now you see somebody get up and say, you know what? This isn't right. I'm going to vote this way, even if it costs me my job. And that is a very rare thing to see.
So you're saying on the gun issue, then the four Democrats who voted no, all of whom were in states that President Obama was fairly well trounced in, as far as I understand. Sure. They just did this so they're back in the next time.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
You know,
you
there is another
have
side.
To suspect that, don't you think?
There is another side. And the other side is a conservative would say, Chuck Grassley said, you know, criminals don't submit to background checks now. They will not submit to expanded background checks. This will not solve the problem. Why further infringe? You know, Rosemary talked about the Patriot Act and the infringement of liberties. And so a conservative might say, hey, this doesn't fix the problem. Why further limit liberties in this case?
But it's the one thing that it looked like, Raymond, my good friend, as they say in the Senate, my good friend.
Yeah. Right back at you, Slim.
Right. Well, I'm not going to take that one up.
Yeah, but, why don't you?
Well,
wow.
Let's get away from
the issue. The issue. The issue. The issue.
Good thing there's no guns here.
Just because he calls me skinny.
Says you.
No. But I think that there is a polarizing thing here. But when Grassley says something like that, first they go out and they say the only thing we might agree to, of all of these proposals, is background checks. And then he gets up and has the chutzpah, the nerve, to say that background checks won't cure it. Well, there was a long laundry list, Raymond, my very good friend. There was a long laundry list.
I'm not Chuck Grassley. I'm just telling you what he said.
Yeah,
just
well,
saying.
And the one thing I've always believed about journalists is that, you know, they don't have opinions unless, but they do know when to quote somebody or otherwise.
I'm and giving you some, the other side some, of the story.
That's sort of like Charlie McCarthy lacking. And, you know.
Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd.
For you young people, they were a ventriloquist. He was a ventriloquist.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so keeping with Alan's thought about journalists using quotes, the National Rifle Association mobilized members to blanket the Senate with phone calls, emails, and letters. The group spent $500,000 on Wednesday alone, $500,000, on an advertising campaign criticizing Obama's gun ban and using Mayor Michael Bloomberg, a deep-pocketed gun control advocate, as a foil. Tell your senator to listen to America's police instead of listening to Obama and Bloomberg.
Okay,
the
may
ad
I?
Said.
Why is this a bad thing when it's okay when Michael Bloomberg spends his money at key times, and people in support of gay rights spend their money at key times? This is the way it works.
Well, no.
I don't understand why they should be singled out for vilification.
I don't know if it was being vilified. I think it's a fact that they...
I'd like to answer that if I have a chance.
Yes,
I'd like to take a chance here. Honestly, Ray, it's easy. Bloomberg was right. The other guys are wrong. And therefore, when you spend money...
Ladies and gentlemen, a word about common sense from Alan Chartok. Now these messages.
There is a difference between the NRA and other lobbying groups. Come on, Ray.
Yeah, come on.
Well, I mean...
They have way too much power. I mean, they have had the power to shut down research on gun injuries. I mean, that's shutting off intellectual process.
I'm not saying whether you're right or wrong. I'm just saying that people spend money on issues at key times. That's all.
I will say that the NRA has been spectacularly successful, and other lobby groups should take lessons from them.
God forbid.
I like it. I like that statement. We have underwriting, right?
Somewhere. We do have underwriting, and then we're going
to
come back.
Ray wants to get out of here.
No, I'm waiting for the next segment about naked ladies running around and whatever else we're going to talk about, like yesterday.
I'm so sorry. I was sick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you missed it.
Coming up next, we will continue our conversation. Rosemary Romeo is here. Ray Graff is here. And, of course, Alan Chartok. We welcome your thoughts. Email us, roundtable@wamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our panel on The Roundtable this morning. We, again, welcome your thoughts, roundtable@wamc.org. We're going to wrap up, but I just want to end with something that I saw in USA Today yesterday, which I thought was, actually, I guess it was on CNN. I thought it was an interesting piece on CNN, where they ask a question that is one of those questions that comes up always, and that is, after something like this happens, whether it be Boston or whether it's gun violence or whether it, whatever the case may be, something tragic and awful happens, is man inherently good or evil? And I thought it was just an
Which
interesting
man?
Question.
Alan?
I wouldn't laugh at that, Joe. It only encourages him.
Isn't that what we want to do is encourage him?
Yeah, we want to encourage him.
Yeah, I thought we wanted to encourage him.
No, but we want to blame him also.
Ah.
Encourage him and blame
him. I think
we've
done that.
Yeah. Yes, we have.
Okay. No, it's a great question. It's a great question. You
I
know,
mean, because you think about the good that came out of, let's just take Boston as an example. I mean, obviously there was one horrible act, but there were so many acts of bravery. There were so many acts of incredible good that came out of that, of people racing to the scene instead of from it, and helping those, and the people who are so active now in the investigation. So is, you know, I'd like to think, I think most of us would like to think that man is inherently good, and that the reason that the things like this shock us so is because those evil moments are rarer. That's what I'd like
don't
to
you think. Don't we all think that each person has a quotient of either of them in them? I mean, my wife, Roselle, who I love so much, is a Holocaust.
Is evil?
You're leading the witness.
Is a Holocaust scholar. And asked that question. she leans towards the evil side. Mm-hmm. That there are people who have the capacity to be led into this kind of thing because of, you know, basically some evil points in them. But of course, she is also somebody who celebrates all those people who have done the right thing and who are at Yad Vashem and all the great people who have done good. But I don't think it's either or. I think it's both.
No, it's admittedly an oversimplified question, and I think it's a question that is interesting to
I think
ask
they're
in
basically
like
evil, and it's civilizing forces that tame that evilness. Mm. And I also think there's something that man is evil and women are not.
Ah, well.
How's that? Because
do you really believe that?
Look at the Rosa horrible crimes. I mean, there are, of course, that's an exaggeration. But overwhelmingly, violence and evil come from men, not women.
And
I shocked them into silence.
No, I'm not so sure you're wrong. I think women may be less evil than men.
I think they're part of the civilizing
Although,
influence.
You go back to the German example that I gave you before about the Holocaust years, there were an awful lot of women those crowds who were screaming at the top of their, you know, lungs, kill the Jews. I mean, it was happening.
I cannot make it. I said it's not absolute, but overwhelmingly.
Well, you did posit, you know, a certain paradigm there that I have certain...
Posit a paradigm? Exactly. Oh, my
God. Posit a paradigm.
Yeah. I did that?
Pickled peppers, and let's do some alliteration for the rest of the show.
I love that. I love that. That's
pickled
good stuff.
Pickled pepper paradigms.
But when you talk about, I mean, obviously good versus evil and whether we are inherently good or whether we are inherently evil. And I've been reading all kinds of statistics and saying, well, you know, it takes more muscles for us to smile than it does for us to frown.
Oh,
that
Dad.
Are sort of our... Exactly.
Depends on your embouchure.
You know,
that's right. If you're,
you
know, you're a trombone player, you're good.
Or a piccolo player.
Right.
That you have a, you know, that we are sort of hardwired basically to, that for us to be good and joy takes more than it does for us to be not evil necessarily, but not to engage into something that would be perceived as good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. But I would love to think that it is, you know, you think that whether, I think Patton Oswalt, which is quoted in the CNN article, the actor and comedian says that, you know, if it's one person or 100 people, that number is a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent of the population in this planet, and that we can't lose sight of that. And Rosemary is shaking her head.
I know. I mean, it is something we'd like to believe. I just don't.
I'll give you the answer in your last 20 seconds.
Go.
Okay.
Since the beginning of time, there has been a battle done between light and darkness. You want to call darkness the devil and light God? That's fine. It happens in men's hearts and men's souls. It will happen forever. It is a battle of civilization against anarchy, against chaos. It will go on forever. It is the battle of light and darkness. End of story.
Well, okay, but that doesn't
poetic.
answer the question of what is of we are inherently one or the other.
We're inherently fighting that battle. It'll happen forever.
So it's half and half then.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, maybe in Alan's case, it might be more or less of one, there's a different
Which
ratio.
Which one?
I'm not saying.
Unfortunately, we're out of time,
you
so we don't have
it.
To. We're going to let Rosemary go because she has a class to teach at just 15 minutes.
Yes,
Rosemary, it's always a pleasure. Hopefully we'll see you next week.
Don't get a ticket.
Very good. Very good. I won't get a ticket. I have to go mold young minds.
Enjoy that process and make them good and not evil.
Yeah,
I will.
Tell them about the men being all evil.
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, give all the female students A's and you'll be all set. Thank you, Rosemary Omeo. Thanks also, of course, to Alan Chartok and to Ray Graff. A reminder that you can join in the discussion. Email us roundtable@wamc.org. Also a reminder that we will be covering the memorial service in Boston at 11 o'clock this morning from our friends at WBUR in Boston. Alan, Raymond, thank you very much.
I want to say one thing. Love you, Ray.
Right back at you, Slim.